to see and to be seen, to love and to be loved. Translated words from Rumi. They speak to it all, don't they? Today's guest, Chuck Davis, is a documentary filmmaker whose latest film, Path of Love, brings us along with a group traveling to Turkey, immersed in Islam, Sufism, and Rumi. The film will be shown at E-Town in Boulder, March 6th. Rumi's been shedding light on us since the 13th century. It will be an honor to shed some light on Rumi. I'm Robin, and this is Tributaries. Chuck, tell us about your background that led into documentary filmmaking.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was an undergraduate in college doing basically my first year of medical school, and I was very political, and a friend and I think this is after the Chicago stuff that happened in 1968, we decided we were going to go to Washington, D.C. and film the split in the country between the Nixon people and, you know, people from his hometown, I think San Clemente, and the hippies and the Living Theater and all the people that were coming to protest the inauguration of Nixon. We did a documentary called Inauguration 69, which was sort of interviewing both sides and putting it together. And then with the culmination being people tried to stop Nixon's walk down Pennsylvania Avenue. And that was my first, I love documentary, and we won the Ann Arbor Film Festival. And I went, wow, I want to do that. But I didn't, because I was being practical. And and I decided to become a doctor, although that was truncated by a year and a half of being in the Peace Corps. And then I came back and went back to medical school. But that's how I first wanted to be a filmmaker. And then I was working in my first real job in Kaiser at Santa Rosa in California. And the weeks would go by so quickly, and I'd be seeing lots and lots of patients. And I just thought, what am I doing? So I decided I wanted to be a filmmaker, and did this little film in England about the buskers and the underground, and got into USC Film School and worked part-time as a doctor, and had a mentor there named Mark Harris, who won a couple of Oscars for his documentaries, and just fell in love with documentary filmmaking. That was kind of the way that it went. Since then, I have a little production company called Throughline Productions, and I've made, I think, 17 films. I think 15 have been on PBS, and this would be the 18th film. I got to fund my films through a combination of grants, and obviously I was making money as a doctor, so I would fund some of them, and some of the films made money, and mostly didn't, and a lot of them broke even, and that's been my career.
Careers, right? That's great that you could
excel at
both.
I was
a
family doctor, then I was a gerontologist, and now I'm doing a mental health care.
You're kind of living the mission of your production company by going deeper and deeper and deeper with all things. And as you mentioned, Throughline Productions is your company, and part of the mission is to explore sociological and spiritual aspects of society from a personal perspective that takes the viewer on a moving journey into themes that touch their heart, open their mind, and motivate them to explore even deeper. And with Fire in the Forest, your film from 2013, you focus on Jewish mysticism and Baal Shem Tov from the 18th century. Tell us a bit about Baal and what piqued your interest to do that film.
Yes. I was a member of a community in Boulder that was called Jewish Renewal, which was started by Rabbi Zalman Shachter Shlomi, who became kind of a well-known figure in the Hasidic community, and then turned out that he wanted to make Judaism more accessible and appeal to younger people, and it was kind of New Age Judaism. And he would tell a lot of stories about the Baal Shem Tov stories. I had a friend who worked with Zalman and was kind of his associate, and I pitched a film to him and to a local rabbi. I said, well, let's go to Ukraine and look at where the Baal Shem Tov taught and how he affected his disciples and how he changed Judaism. So we did this film about the turning of Judaism at that time from sort of a religion of laws and following what you had to do to a religion of the people, where people could actually directly not have to go through the rabbis to God. And the Baal Shem Tov himself was a mystic. So I thought, what an interesting combination, since I was interested in mysticism. And we just went to the towns where the graves of these luminaries from the Baal Shem Tov, and for the next 100 years, reformed Judaism. I mean, it was a reform at the time. Now, and which is now called Hasidism, but now, of course, it's very conservative. But at the time, it was a complete revolution to make Judaism a much more spiritual and more directly connected to the mystical experience. So I was really interested. We made this film, and there's a connection between that film and the film I'm making now, because that friend, his name is Natanael Miles Yepitz, who's actually the chair of the Religious Studies Department in Europa. He was a Sufi as well, as was Zalman. That's how I ended up making my first film about Sufism.
Yes, and I was going to take us now on to a fast forward to 2023, where you were in Turkey with Omid Safi, Making Path of Love, your current film. How would you describe your journey in those 10 years between these two films, leading to another mystic deep dive?
Right. Well, in between, besides making a film about the environment called Ocean Cities, I made a film about universal Sufism, sort of what basic Sufism. So it was basically not religious as far as a religion goes. So we made this film, Living from the Heart. And I was camera, because my cameraman was late in coming. And I was filming then a head of a group of Sufis whose name is Pir Zia. And I fell in love with Pir Zia, and I decided to do a 2-year course in Sufism in Richmond, Virginia, where he was. And every 3 months, we'd go for a week. And I met Omid Safi, who was a professor of Middle Eastern studies at Duke and an expert in Rumi. And I thought, wow, I've read Rumi for a long time. I love Rumi. Maybe there's a movie here. And I knew that he was going to Turkey, taking a number of people on a path to investigate the teachings of Rumi and Sufism and Islam. And I thought this would be a great movie. And that's how I came to make Path of the Heart, which is following his journey with these people, about 50 of them, through different parts of Turkey where Rumi taught, where he lived, and where some of his people who followed him also taught. And it was basically about, and it is, about his teachings of both Islam and Sufism. So that's basically the story of how I got to this film. And I didn't know Omid very well, and just found him to be an amazing translator of the mystic teachings and of Islam and of Rumi as well. So that's where Path of the Heart came from.
Yes, and Omid is a local, basically. He was born in America, but spent a lot of his youth, up until 15 or so, in that world.
Yeah, his parents were from Iran, and he went, I think he lived there for 8 years, came back here, grew up in the South. If you see the movie, you'll know that there's no way you wouldn't think he's born, you know, just been in America ever since he was born. But he just really knows the American idiom, is able to take really difficult concepts of God, of mysticism, and just make them clear and easy to really understand and take in. And I just found him a great vehicle to show us what Islam really is like, and what Sufism and the teachings of Rumi were all about.
So yes.
That's the film, basically.
And that really speaks to not only his ability to translate from an intimate knowing, because he had such a handle on the language and everything, but it also speaks to someone who knows Rumi, for instance. We're all attracted to Rumi because he knows what he's talking about, right? And anyone who's a great mystic or knows any subject intimately, we're attracted because we know they know what they're talking about. It's not a peripheral knowledge, certainly. And Coleman Barks is the well-known translator of Rumi, calling his poetry the mystery of opening the heart. But interestingly, he interpreted the English verse already translated from Persian or Turkish, and I think Arabic and Greek as well.
That's true.
Did Omid ever comment on this?
Yes, he did. He, as I may have mentioned earlier, he is a friend of Coleman Barks and likes the translations, but doesn't...
They're beautiful, yes.
Doesn't read the translations of Rumi. He reads them in the original. Omid speaks both Turkish and Farsi or Persian, and in fact, in the film, he does recite a couple of the famous poems of Rumi in Farsi. And it's obviously a completely different experience for him, since the language is so beautiful. And most of Rumi's poetry, not in Coleman Barks' translations, are rhymes with lots of meanings. And Omid is known in the United States as probably the U.S. expert in Rumi and the works of Rumi. So Omid is really much more in touch with what the essential Rumi is about.
So how did that affect your love of Rumi, having both of these? I know you're familiar with Coleman.
We did this big text that Rumi wrote called the Masnavi. We've studied that in parts of this tour. So it opened my eyes to something else about Rumi, which was that Rumi during the day was a very famous and very important cleric in Turkey, where he lived in Konya. And I got to be interested in Islam itself. So the translations of what Rumi was about and what his poems were about are in the context of Islam, and that was different. I had no experience or understanding of that until this experience of 7 days in Turkey.
Coleman's interpretations of Rumi minimize the references to Islam, as you just mentioned. And going back to your mission statement, exploring the sociological aspect of society, can you speak to perhaps the deeper connection Omid had? Speak to that first, and then how does that affect the mystical message overall? Does it?
Great question. First of all, I come to Rumi from a romantic point of view. I'm a really big romantic, and my initial introduction to Rumi was that these are poems about people-to-people romance, which was true for Rumi. Rumi's big romance with Shams, probably not sexual, but it's not about that. It's really about our need and I guess responsibility to have a love of God, which is a very important concept in Sufism and Islam. And that was a concept that I found difficult to really take in. And I had to really think about that a lot. And I had to think about the nature of love. In fact, the film that I was going to make was about the nature of love. But the love they're talking about is just big. It is God, as the little piece of the film shows you. And that was real. It was a real different way of looking at, if you look at the texts, even Coleman Barks stuff. It's really about God. It's not just about romantic love or even love of a child, but it's really about our love of God and vice versa, God's love of us. So that was really interesting. And it's all over Islam. It's all over the Quran. And Omid did talk a lot about the Quran and Muhammad. I thought that was... That's something that needs to be shown to people who know nothing about Islam. And I think that's part of my goal in this film, is that this film is not just about Rumi, not just about Rumi's teachings or Sufism, but it's really about what is the essence of Islam and really the essence of most all religions.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Love is the thing, yeah.
Yeah, even the Beatles got it right.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it was really beautiful and intimate in a way as well, with you showing discussions of Omid with the group that was traveling with him.
Right.
One woman in particular was so sincerely wanting to love God, but not unlike you, initially, she could love her child or her husband or whoever, and
right.
and yet making that leap over into loving God was new. And so it's really beautiful to see other seekers, because ultimately we probably are all seekers, even if we're not even conscious of it, right?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, is this the way we can touch in to the mysticism, to the unknowable, to the what is this? It's not a feeling, it's not an intellectual discipline of love. How does that power our lives, and why is that really central? That's what Sufism is about. And I don't call myself a Sufi, but I am certainly practicing that, trying to understand how to both receive and give love in a big way, not just love like you were just saying about love my kids and my partner, but the big love. Yeah, that's still a ongoing, I don't know, I wouldn't call it a dilemma, but an ongoing pursuit of mine is, you know, how to hook into receiving and giving.
Yes.
It's not just about receiving love. I think a lot of people think, oh, we need to receive God's love. No, it's really about giving it as well. So, and yes. giving it to the world.
Yes, absolutely. You know? Yes. We spoke a little bit about the colonization or non-colonization of translation and poetry. And for me, what was left after watching Path of Love is that I felt like it was more than okay to lose the origin of it being part of Islam or Sufism with Rumi, because anytime we move into spirit and truth, all of that hopefully gets immediately lost, and not lost in translation, but just plain lost, so we can really pursue the big picture of love.
I'm right with you. The teacher that I had sat with or learned from, Pirzia, that's his take, with a guy who came here in the early 1900s named Hazrat Inayat Khan, and he wanted to open up this truth to non-Muslims and to make it non-Islamic. And that's how I feel about it. But it's also eye-opening to see how it fits into that particular tradition.
Yes, that's true.
And hopefully it comes out in the film. And that's what I got by being there with Omid for that week in 8 days in Turkey.
Yeah. Well, you've made more than 10, you just said 17 or 18 documentaries with various subject matter. What challenges you most in the process of actually making a documentary?
Always the editing. as I think, and when I go to make a documentary, I do write a one-page or about a one-page treatment of what I'm trying to do. And then I film it, and it's like, whoa, it may not be what I was thinking of. The example I have is the one film that's probably my most well-known is called Cambodian Donut Dreams, which was intended to be a film about donut shops in Los Angeles where veterans from the Vietnam War would meet. And it was kind of like, what's it like to be in a donut shop, which is the coffee house of veterans? But no, it wasn't that. It was really about the people who owned the donut shops, who were Cambodian, all of whom had been under the rule of Pol Pot and suffered under his rule. And that's the film. And so I made a completely different film, and that's not unusual. So editing is the struggle. Like, for instance, this film, 30 hours of footage. What is this? What's the truth here that I want to tell? And that's the hard part, and that's the part I like the most, actually.
Good for
so
you.
So piecing together, this film could have been, I could have gone a lot of different ways.
Yes.
And I decided to make it about Omid's teaching. And to me, it's satisfying that what came out of it is something that's, I think, has a broader appeal.
Yes. So have you ever been tempted to do a narrative story in film?
Of course. I actually got the rights to a Primo Levi's book called If Not Now, When?, which is about people who were partisans and after World War II and what happened when the war ended. But that never happened for me. And I'm probably not a good screenwriter. So that was the one opportunity I had. And it turns out that Primo Levi's works, The Periodic Table, is kind of famous for that book. There were a couple of movies made from his books, which really would have had the same topic as the one I wanted to make. So that was my one opportunity.
And so far.
honestly, in film school at USC, I really was the student of Mark Harris, who, if you look him up, he's had two Oscars for long documentary forms. So I really wanted to do the work that he did. So that's kind of where I went. I'm happy with that. I don't think I would be a particularly great film director of the narrative. Because what I do is I make these films in editing. I don't write them. And I like that. I like to see what comes out.
Wonderful. Werner Herzog talks about making documentaries and wanting to get to the ecstasy of truth and just sharing the Manhattan phone book, as he put it. And
Right.
And with that, with barring any typos, the Manhattan phone book is the truth, right? You've done films. You've made films about many topics and subject matter. Does the subject matter present a challenge, or is it just once you're focused on a subject, then off you go?
Well, like there are two parts of the documentary from my point of view, and one of them is what stuff you're trying to talk about. For instance, I did a film, it's called Ocean Cities, it's about sea level rise. But really, what the films ultimately are about the people who are talking. And so my skill, I think, if I have one, is trying to get them to explain stuff that I'm really curious about. I don't know if I answered the question, but that's what I like about filmmaking, is meeting these, quote, experts and trying to really tease out what it is they know. Because I'm curious, and that's why I make films. I'm curious about a lot of things, but you know, it turns out that most of my films are either about the environment or about spirituality, and that's just kind of where my path led. And I don't know where it's going to lead next. I'm thinking of a film. I don't know if this should make the cut here, but I'm thinking of a film about unpacking Zen, because I was a Zen student for a long time. So it's going to be the concept of Zen that we have in our society and the actual Zen religion. That's something that may happen in the future. I don't know.
That would be interesting, when we talk about concepts and then the actual. There's a lot of room in there sometimes, isn't there?
The thing that I really love is the people stuff. The Baal Shem Tov film, I had a conservative rabbi from Boulder, Rabbi Mark Soloway, became the storyteller. But I really got to know Mark and what he believed in, and that was really interesting. And you know, the other films I've made, one about foster parenting, one about kosher slaughterhouse in southern Colorado, and one about...
I'm familiar with that place,
actually. What's really interesting about the people were so interesting for me, who were doing what the film were about. So I really like that part. And that, I have to say that it does cross over to being a doctor and currently doing mental health. So getting to really explore what people are about is really the most fun part of the filmmaking, I think.
Well, how beautiful that you really took some deep dives into mysticism, and then you can work with people, because it leaves a lot of room for their growth, I think, by working with someone who's looked into their own and what that means, ultimately, to have such a really literal bird's eye view of what love is and who people are.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
So will you be at the filming of The Path of Love March 6th?
I will give a little talk before the film and then do a talk back afterwards. Unfortunately, my videographer is not going to be here, and he clearly was very important in making the film. And one of my associate editors or assistant editor will be there, and I don't know whether he's going to talk or not, but Yeah, and Omid would have come, but I think he's going to Tunisia, so he's not going to be there. Omid Safi, really the film is about him and his teachings. He will not be attending the film, but obviously it's all about him and about what he has to say.
Right. Well, one thing to finish, when you were talking about why you're making film, I'm sitting here doing the same thing with radio.
Of course.
It's interesting, right? So you, being a filmmaker, you are, and in a previous conversation, you said, I'm a good interviewer. So what, if someone who saw Path of Love, what would your first question be for them?
I would say something about, how did your concept of love change after seeing this film? And or, what did you think about Islam, the religion, before you watched the film? And how did that inform you about that religion? And what were the surprises, the ahas?
Okay, well, if I'm at your Q&A afterwards, I might shoot those
Please.
Back to you.
All right, good.
Okay, who can resist a poem from Rumi to close? This one is called A New Rule. It is the rule with drunkards to fall upon each other, to quarrel, become violent, and make a scene. The lover is even worse than a drunkard. I will tell you what love is, to enter a mine of gold. And what is that gold? The lover is a king above all kings, unafraid of death, not at all interested in a golden crown. The dervish has a pearl concealed under his patched cloak. Why should he go begging door to door? Last night that moon came along, drunk, dropping clothes in the street. Get up, I told my heart. Give the soul a glass of wine. The moment has come to join the nightingale in the garden, to taste sugar with the soul parrot. I have fallen with my heart shattered. Where else but on your path? And I broke your bowl, drunk, my idol so drunk. Don't let me be harmed. Take my hand. A new rule, a new law has been born. Break all the glasses and fall toward the glass blower. Many thanks to Chuck Davis for sharing about making films and making films about the mystical love. Path of Love will be seen Wednesday evening at E-Town on March 6th. For anything Tributaries related, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Our podcasts are where you'd like to find them, and if not, please be in touch. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.